Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the midweek show from the Bagel Tech Network, where we look at the week's tech news that's taken past with everything but Apple, all of the technology that's gone and been and isn't anymore. And I've got my usual fantastic panel joining me. Top left, Mr. James Hart. Hello, mate.
Good evening, Ewan.
How are things?
Well, I was a bit damp this morning, but now I'm simply disappointed.
Why?
Because I've missed my opportunity to buy a cut-price HP touchpad from Currys and Dixons. They were going for something like 50, 60 quid. And it would be boxed up in my loft until, I don't know, 2035, when I would sell it at a boot sale for a fiver.
When your son will get it out and serve drinks at it at
exactly,
your funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's there's over a million of them made, though, isn't there? You've got a good chance of getting another one.
Oh, well, I'll keep my eyes open. I shall check Amazon and I shall stand outside Dixon's and pop in every time it opens.
Fear not. Fear not.
A million.
A million. An absolute million. Next to him, we've got, it says Alex Fox, but it's not. It's Ian Grant. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Back again.
Yes, back again.
Good fun. How's your week been?
Oh, not bad, but I worked out a day off today, so I've been sort of tearing around here and there. My lad's got his results for his GCSEs, which is good.
How's he done?
As expected, he got a stack of Bs and a couple of Cs in a couple of Ds, so he's pretty pleased with that.
Well, that's good, because everyone knows there's a shortage of Bs in the world.
Indeed.
Below him, we've got Sarah Jane. How you doing, Mrs?
I'm fine, thank you. Glad to have got to this point of the week without having killed anybody, but that's...
A taxing week for you.
Yes. I'll be looking forward to the bank holiday weekend. This time tomorrow night.
Oh, is it this weekend?
It is indeed.
Oh, bugger.
And we got the Belgian Grand Prix as well.
Yes. We've got to do What's It Show on Sunday night.
Indeed.
And I'm going to be able to watch it on Sunday as well, because I'm playing cricket on Saturday instead.
Oh, that's the result.
I scored 99 last week.
Ah. Oh.
Is Ewan low again? I'm trying my hardest here. And finally, from the West Coast epicenter of technology, Eric Lanigan. Hello, mate.
Hello.
Guys. I was going to say what's been happening over there, but that's kind of a stupid question, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
What has been happening?
We had the H-bomb that was... Oh, aye.
Oh, sorry, mate.
Yeah, you missed mute.
Yes.
You missed mute and ended up with mucus. There we go. He's got mute now. We had the HP bomb of last week, and then all of a sudden, Steve Jobs decides he wants to retire. Which is not kind of all of a sudden, I suppose, really, is it?
Well, we hoped it wasn't going to be like this. He said he fully intended to return to Apple, so we all held out some hope, I think, but... I think in the back of our minds, we all knew this was the more likely scenario.
Yeah, I'm normally pretty reticent about talking about Apple stuff on this show because we've got the Mac show tomorrow. But, I mean, this is something that's significant enough. I think everyone needs to have their say or their take on it all and that kind of thing. So, I mean, what's the thought process that's gone on in the last 24 hours since the announcement for you guys?
I'm of the usual opinion. I'm always bizarrely amused by... The Apple distortion field of someone leaving a business. Even someone like Steve Jobs can generate this much media interest. I really am. I mean, it's sad for the guy. He's obviously not well, and he's decided it's time he should get out. He should get out while he's still got some of his health and enjoy time with his kids, I'm guessing.
Mm.
But beyond that, Apple have got the whole thing, iPhone 7s and 8s planned up to the wazoo, I'm pretty sure. You know, it's not going to affect the business in a big way.
Anyone else?
I see it slightly differently in that Steve Jobs brought Apple back from the brink of bankruptcy a few years ago. And what's happened over the last little while, certainly with... I know I was just thinking before I came on, which I was going to put in the chat room, we should have a drinking game involving Apple and patents. But I've already mentioned both now, so we're all screwed. Was the fact that Apple is part of this crazy patents race. And that we can't, I heard rumors that there was another Apple device coming out, but I can't see much innovation over the horizon. I'm thinking to myself, if Steve Jobs stops being the powerhouse behind every single detail of Apple, what is going to happen to it? And that's I do worry. I don't worry because I'm not really a huge Apple fan, but I do wonder whether Apple will ever be the same again.
I think we need to. I think that might be a bit premature. I know that everyone's thinking, well, you know, this is the end. This could be the. You know, some people are saying this could be the end of Apple if Steve's not around. But I really think we need to give them a chance. I don't think necessarily is. I think there's plenty of other creative people. They got some very talented people there. Whether there's somebody, whether they can find somebody with the same charisma to lead Apple is a different matter. I think we've really just got to wait and see.
Well, I was listening to a Guardian a piece about it, and they were saying what he's done is he's recruited people to sort of fit the various different roles that he played. You've got Tim Cook, who's the financial guy. You've got the marketing guy, who's the one who stands up and does the keynotes. And he's almost got kind of like an amalgamation of people who turn into one Steve Jobs, who was the all-rounder, which I thought was quite an interesting sort of comparison.
Which certainly, if I was a stockholder in Apple, would make me feel a lot more happy rather than having that much reliant on one person.
Surely the whole point of this is that Apple has spent 2 years preparing for this day. It's always been about trolling other people out at the events. It's always been about dispersing the glow and the epicenter of Steve onto others that are then portrayed as competent. You know, they've all taken the stage. They've all had their moment in the spotlight. Steve stepped back. And I mean, at the last launch, he walked out, effectively said hi, and then walked off again until he came back at the end and just did the iTunes part. This has always been about Steve has to show faith and solidarity. He was brought back before from health leave to show, you know, stockholder confidence was increased as a result. The share price boomed as a result. You know, that's all this has ever been about. It's not been about what's best for Steve Jobs.
No, I think there may be something in what James was saying about the fact that they've known that this was going to happen and that they've spent the last year or so making sure that the right people are in place, ready for when Steve does need to depart.
What do you guys make of the fact, and you in particular, because you were just talking recently about how we were kind of sharing our thoughts on how Apple has done some odd things lately that seemed like they're losing their soul. They're doing things that seemed anti-consumer, anti-developer, anti-competition. It's just like, why are they doing this to people, to the people that care about them? How do you think this affects that? I see it could go either way. I could see that the Apple that Apple has become over the last couple of years and even the last couple of months could be as a result of Steve Jobs pulling back and stepping back and not having as much of a day-to-day role, and then things like that go wrong. If that's the case, then goodbye Apple, I'm afraid. The other possibility is that Steve could feel like he's on his deathbed. He's making some last-minute, maybe hasty decisions, maybe a little bit too iron-fisted and unequivocal. And that maybe if with him out of the way, there can, you know, saner heads will prevail. And maybe he kind of lost his own touch as he feels his encroaching mortality. What do you guys think?
I think they've been coaching Cook up for the last couple of years. And I'm sure that it's going to be the same thing. They're going to coach Cook in terms of, this is how I see Apple becoming going on forward now. This is, and that, as I was saying earlier, they've mapped out all their new products. I can't see there being too much scary until they get to the end of what they've mapped out. And they've still got people like Johnny Ive. I mean, he's the guy who designs most of this beautiful tech. It's only Jobs he really goes around and goes, oh, look, take all those ports off there.
He's the Brit, isn't he?
He's the Brit, yeah.
Yeah, he's the iMac guy.
He's the iMac guy. Well, just about everything, guys. And doesn't he oversee almost all the designs?
Yeah, he's,
he's the chief designer.
I think the thing that you've got with the whole of this process is the fact that, as I said a few weeks back, I think for certainly in recent periods, Steve Jobs has become old Mr. Grace from Are You Being Served? And he's the figurehead, he's the totem, he's the thing that everyone revolves around. But I think what you've actually got in the water is a whole pile of sharks who are extremely good at what they're doing. And I think all of the knife-turning exercises that are taking place now, I'm not sure whether Steve is comfortable or not comfortable with them, or he's letting having them in the head. But I think the people that are turning Apple into a blatantly consumerist and corporate entity are the people who are going to be taking over now that Steve Jobs has gone. And I'm sorry to say that I sat and thought to myself a year ago, at some point there'll be an announcement that Steve Jobs will be stepping right back from Apple. And then I think the sad part of that is you've probably got 1 to 3 months before we'll be saying other things about him. unfortunately, which is not good.
I hope you're wrong, Ewan. I really do.
I think the next 6 months, I think we've probably been saying this for 6 months, but the next 6 months will be very interesting for the IT industry in general, because you've got HP making all these crazy decisions. You've got Apple doing, there's a sea change going on. If Samsung are able to do what they are reputed to be doing and buy the HP computers division, it could completely change the whole way that the computers are sold, and who are they sold to, and who's buying them, and the whole power base could move. It could end up anywhere, really. It really honestly could. Except it won't end up in Microsoft, and it won't end up in Facebook.
James, what did you just say won't end up at Microsoft or Facebook? Because I think that was going to lead into something.
Won't end up in either of those two places, because they're not really running with anything at the moment.
Well, let me ask you guys this. So what I've been hearing you guys say, and a lot of folks say, is that some of you are saying not to worry, because the best people are in place and have been in place for a while, and Steve's been slowly on his way out from control of the day-to-day company. And so
I think I said sharks, but go on.
Well, the point being that Steve is not the only one there. He's not Apple is not Steve Jobs. There are other people there who are doing the great work and the creative work as well. Well, if the whole point is they can continue without Steve Jobs because Steve Jobs has taught them the Steve Jobs way, what's stopping Google, Facebook, Microsoft, any other company from poaching those employees the way employees are routinely poached from Google to Facebook? You know, people have no trouble just jumping ship when a better offer comes in, no matter how enthusiastic they are behind the company. And they might be offered better offers or something. So what do you think? If the reason, because see, here's my reasoning. So no company has done what Apple has done. Just they don't have what Apple has. And we're not getting into whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Apple's a different company. I think they're a different kind of company because of Steve Jobs. The whole culture there and the mystique around the company, it's all because of him. And so if the only thing left to say about the company is that he's trained and left enough words of wisdom behind to private individuals, obviously not public, unless he does end up spilling the beans in his biography coming out later this year. But a lot of that's got to be still proprietary. And as much as we've heard that they've been telling and training employees now about the Apple way and the Steve Jobs way by using case studies and so forth, they're just teaching Steve's way of thinking to the people who are there, not the public at large. So if no one else can compete with Apple now because they have Steve, what's to stop the people who learn from Steve from going elsewhere? And then you have no Apple.
Very scary thought.
Mm. Well, I mean,
my point is that I guess my point is that even if the best thing we can say is that Steve has left enough of his remains within the company, enough of his thought processes and enough of his DNA is in the people at Apple. Because, you know, again, a company is people. So it's the people at Apple. People can be taken away. They can move to companies. They can, you know, retire. So if it's the people who learn from Steve, you see what I'm saying? That's not a company. Eventually, you give that enough years for the people to even just retire, and that's no longer a company.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, but one thing I think is, if you look at Ron Johnson, has there been anyone appointed to replace Ron Johnson?
I don't know who that is.
Exactly. And that's my thought. There is no press release that says who the next Ron Johnson is. There is no... Who's the dude that did IADS? He left last week. Timothy someone. There's no press release about who's replacing him.
And is that to say they're hemorrhaging people at the moment then?
They've lost a lot of high up people, but I don't think that's an issue, because what I think the issue is the fact that there's no press releases about who they're buying in to fulfill the role. I think these roles are being fulfilled internally. And I think
Wait, who is Ron Johnson?
Ron Johnson's the retail guru. He left to go to JCPenney about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah,
and Ian, someone or other, I think, left last week. He's the guy that did the IADS breakthrough. That was his division. He's gone. So they have been losing senior people sporadically, and not. I don't think it's not an exodus, not by any stretch of the imagination. But there's been no press release about who's taking on their role or who they're buying in from outside, which makes me think Apple's almost like a row of shark's teeth. You know, one pops off the front, another one pops up behind, and there's an indoctrination that's going through. And I don't mean that indoctrination in a bad way. I think that's in a good way. You know, the hand is being passed through the organization, and you can see it in the retail stores. If you go and look and talk to the staff at the retail store, and I mean this as a compliment, there's a very McDonald's ethic within the retail staff, in the sense that there is a party line, there is a corporate entity, there is a corporate formula, and that corporate formula is being followed through.
It's interesting you say that because it's very similar to Disney as well, isn't it? In that kind of, it is the Disney way. There's an interesting point brought up by Tony in the chat room about the sort of the retention of staff, because the staff obviously have with them quite a lot of internal secrets and knowledge. And so I wonder what sort of, not pressure is put on the staff, but what sort of things the staff are not even being forced to sign, but what retention policies the staff have to agree to make sure that they don't go up sticks, move to another company and take the secrets with them.
Who on earth is that?
The thing is, within a certain
shark.
It's a shark. It's a wolf. It's a wolf shark.
I was just going to say, within a certain...
It's Ian's lost the mute button again and he got another cough, kind of. Sarah, you were about to say.
I was just going to say, within certain, with you know, subject to, you know, what you actually own with a patent, it's impossible to completely control everything when it comes to what's in people's minds and what they learn and learning about ways of doing things when you're at a company, because that's how people build careers. That information is, you know, everything I learn about, you know, when I work at XYZ company, I might well use that when I'm another company. Obviously, if it's proprietary, that's a bit different, but you still use it in subtle ways, even if it's how you learn a method of doing something.
That's part of the value of a good employee, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
No company that lost its visionary founder has ever been as good as it has been. So someone just said Disney. Well, I mean, when Walt Disney left and what's his name came in, what was his name? Other CEO.
Who cares? Exactly. That's the point. What's his name came in?
Well, no, he's a famous name. I don't know why I'm forgetting it. But you know, he was widely criticized for having, you know, the company lost its soul and started making like Lion King 34 and a half and like all these different like straight to video things and just, you know, just corporate just selling out of their characters and overextending everything. HP, when it lost its founders, you see what happened to them now years down the road. Microsoft without Bill Gates, you know, as much... That's an end of an era right there. The Steve and Bill rivalry is now completely gone. But I mean, with Ballmer then in the lead, people say Microsoft has no visionary leader and no overall vision for the company to steer it. I don't take comfort in knowing that some people there have worked with Steve in the past, I guess is all. I think this really is the end of Apple as we know it. They may continue on as some kind of a consumer-focused media sales company where like they're renting us music, movies, and TV shows, and they're storing our information in the cloud, and they're sending us stuff like that. But I think this, and they may still make really great hardware, but I think a lot of the little software and touches and things like that, and the overall global visions that we've appreciated for years, I think we won't be looking to Apple anymore for that real industry moving innovation.
Let me ask a simple question of you then. How many of you believe that any of the devices that are currently being on the Apple product list are the inception of Steve Jobs? Was the iPad the inception of Steve Jobs? Or did someone come up with the idea and Steve Jobs tinkered with it and made it into something that was brutally sellable?
I was going to say, Steve has proved himself to be the master of creating the perfect version of something that's already out there.
The thing that the people want. He's the marketer. Yes. Yeah.
See, he's on the market. He knows what people want.
I've just got this thing in my head that too many people are crediting Steve Jobs with too much. There is not physically enough frigging time in the day for him to engineer an entire line of desktops and laptops and personal music players and pads and other accessories that go along with all of those things and a folding cover that looks like a Japanese bath cover. You know, he can't do that. He physically cannot do that.
You say that, Ewan, but he used to respond to emails from punters. You know, I think he lived and breathed and was Apple to the point where he did do everything. Again, the interview I was listening on the Guardian thing was with someone who used to work with him, and Steve Jobs had a part in coding QuickTime to make sure that everything in QuickTime Player was just as he wanted it. And I think the product line has expanded widthways, but underpinning all that are the principles that Steve Jobs has said it will have this, it will do that, and it will have that. He'd probably do the QA afterwards and say, "What's this? What, you know?" And from what I understand, he'd be quite sharp and harsh about something if it wasn't to his satisfaction. So I think he did have the time and the energy to do that.
Yeah, I think the thing you've got to be aware of, and this is something that I always think, when you see a CEO of a company and you hear them at their annual general meeting and or in the press, and they take, you know, seem to be getting lots of credit for X, Y, Z that they've done and so on and so forth, is the thing you have to remember is take that with a pinch of salt, because all they've, you know, without taking anything away from them, what they've done is taken ownership of the responsibility for the decisions to do that, not necessarily be the ones that have actually created that. And I think in that respect, Apple, Steve has steered Apple in the right direction.
Absolutely.
You can credit him with the decisions. You can't necessarily credit him with all the, you know, all the ideas and everything.
Although what he is. But that's what's quite interesting, though, Sarah, is that everybody else is so far back. You know, Apple Store guy, all the way to the guys who are, not the guys who are assembling, the guys who are in the departments for the coding and the software and stuff. Nobody really, these are all unsung heroes of Apple. And Steve Jobs was the guy that everybody, you know, this reality distortion field that Ian alluded to right at the beginning is the work of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, you have to look at Apple as at least half marketing. You have to remember that some of these things that they do, exactly, James. You can't underestimate the significance of the reality distortion field and the Steve Jobs keynotes and all the stuff that he's been known for doing, right down to his unique personality, the way that he'll just randomly come out and like bash 7-inch tablets or something, just say something that's like super opinionated randomly, and you hear these stories about him and stuff. You can't replicate that. When he would get up on stage and sell something and everyone would leave thinking this is the greatest thing in the world that any human being has ever made, that's him selling it. I mean, other people can't do that. And there have been volumes written on his ability just to sell products and give a presentation, revealing products or talking about products. So many people disagree that Apple's products are the best in the world. And to the extent that they might be, the rest you'd have to say is contributed to his salesmanship.
I think there's something in that, you know, this idea, there was Vic Kungota, he blogged something on Google today about the fact that this thing about a phone call from Steve Jobs on a Sunday during his religious meeting about the yellow on the Google logo, on the first Google O, didn't look right in the application that they'd submitted. And he was going to assign one of his people to call this guy that afternoon and sort the issue out because it was really, really pressing. Someone who thinks that the yellow is wrong on a Sunday morning for an application that's been submitted for approval has got serious OCD problems, nothing more than that. And also, if you look at as a shareholder, you talk about, say, let's take away from the Steve Jobs, let's go to a completely different chief executive. And the chief executive of BA, whoever that currently is this week, goes on a flight and the plane nearly falls out of the sky because of poor maintenance, and he's sitting there going on about the red in the tail fin. And if I was a shareholder, I would sit at a meeting, I would say, what is your annual expenditure on marketing staff and people controlling your marketing budget, which includes things like visuals and includes things like livery for planes and that type of stuff? How come you're picking out the red in the planes wrong and they're not? Because your job is to periodically identify things like that and drill down through the organization and find out why that piece of your organization is not doing its job properly. It's not to sit and worry about whether the frigging red's right or wrong. It's to find out why the organization's not picking out that the red's right or wrong. That's the problem. That is crap chief executive work if you're doing that kind of level of detail.
Mm.
I hear your point.
You're having trouble delegating.
Yes.
You, and that's a very valid point.
Maybe you don't want to delegate. Sorry, Eric, go for it.
Sorry, James. You, and that's a very valid point, and one that could very well be true in a number of situations, that, yeah, that seems awfully silly of the CEO to be concerned about the exact shade of yellow on a certain application. But I think stories like that may be on the extreme and indicative of his overall hands-on approach to all he had his hands everywhere. He was always looking at everything. He was it's stories like that make you able to say that Steve Jobs, that Apple identified so closely with Steve Jobs. That's why the two images of the company and the person are married together like that, because overall throughout the company, he had that hands-on approach right down to colors of applications. Yeah, in his most extreme anecdotes, it seems extreme and ridiculous, but I think if you don't have a person like that, you also tend not to have a person who's like looking at the designs of, well, things that matter more.
It's like, as Alex said in the chat room, it's like Bagel Tech and Ewan.
Well, I think that's exactly the point, if you want my honest opinion of it, because last couple of weeks, Sarah and I have been sitting, tweaking the website to try and change the way it looks, you know, ever so subtly, ever so slightly, because I'm the only person, along with Sarah, who sits and does anything with the website now that Russ has done his design work on it, and we've actually struggled to make it look like Russ's design in the first place. If I was chief executive of Bageltech and we had several million dollars and I paid someone to be doing that, I'd be really frigging pissed off if I was sat with Sarah fixing it and trying to work out what it was. If I looked at the website and it looked like crap and I said it looks like crap and they said, well, that's the way it is, I'd say, there's the door. I wouldn't start micromanaging it, because that is no good for your shareholders. I just think that the stories around Steve Jobs have a strong, strong farmyard smell to it. And I've got to say, I tweeted out today, some of the horse crap that's been talked on some people's blogs, it's been vomit-inducing, sycophantic, vomit-inducing, turdy crap. There you go.
Well, you're not going to get an argument from me on that, Ewan.
Well, me here, because I've always found it unhealthy, the sort of reaction that people have to Jobs and Apple and all the holy grail and it's all it's this and it's that. It's nothing. The man isn't the company and the company isn't the man, I don't think.
There are too many people doing too many things at Apple that Steve Jobs has had absolutely sod all to do with.
I think the biggest legacy that you can say about Steve is that he came in, apart from the fact that, and everyone seems to, we're not mentioning this in this conversation, is that obviously him and Wozniak formed the company in the first place. We're all talking about the events that happened really after he came back. Mm. Is that, you know, he took a company that was in the doldrums and got it to where it is today. And for that, never mind how he's done it, but the fact that he's done it, to me, is his biggest legacy.
I think that the corporation that was Apple, that was saved by Steve Jobs, is nothing like what it currently is. And I think the reason is they've got money, they've got people, they've got influence, they've got power, and the people who are trained to deal with money, influence, power, and chief executive Tim Cook, who is a balls and all financial guy, is doing what he's getting paid for, and he's running the best interests of Apple to the nth degree that he possibly can, to the letter of the law as he sees it, until someone says otherwise. Good on him. But it ain't Steve Jobs.
Absolutely. And I think as much as anything, Apple is first and foremost a company that makes stuff to make money. The thing that sort of occurred to me, I wonder what's going to happen to... It'd be great to do a survey of Apple fan people in the next sort of 6 months to a year to find out if it drops off a little bit. I know it's dropped off a fair amount in the last few years since Apple have stopped attending other trade shows and made other moves that have been generally unpopular. But I wonder if the fanboy thing is going to dwindle as time goes on.
And 34 minutes in, I have that brief comment on Steve Jobs.
You pressed record.
Means I have nothing to talk about tomorrow on the Mac Show now. Thank you.
No, you see, the whole thing about the Mac Show is you guys are going to be celebrating the life and work of Steve Jobs, going through in painstaking detail all the cool stuff he's done.
I'm like Wurzel Gummidge. I've got a Steve Jobs head that I'll have on tomorrow that'll be, oh, Steve. Wurzel Gummidge. You need to YouTube Wurzel Gummidge, mate, with a Z. W-U-R-Z-E-L, Eric. Wurzel Gummidge.
If I could make one request about the Mac Show tomorrow, would be don't forget the first period that Steve was at Apple, because I have this feeling that all the focus seems to be on, you know, the eye products and so on and so forth. Everyone's forgetting about the early days, which are just as important.
Let's talk about something else.
Other stories in the news. Jamie Thomas has had a month and a half ago, $94 million originally or something stupid. $1.92 million was reduced and to 54,000 a month ago. But apparently the RIAA have appealed and they want it increased to 1.5 million.
Has she got this money?
Do you realise how long this has been going on?
A very long time.
5 years.
I imagine the lawyers have pretty much made that already.
It's gone on so long that no one uses Kazaa anymore, which was the original.
I mean, that's right. Was it? It was Kazaa.
It was Kazaa. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Which the Kazaa guy is it? Okay.
It was the Kazaa peer-to-peer network that she posted 24 songs on.
I mean, that's like hearing that someone was. That's like hearing someone was still being sued today in court for something they taped on a Betamax.
Yeah, it's about almost, it's on the edge of being that pointless, isn't it? The thing that gets me about this whole thing, though, is I know that this is really is a test case, but what's the difference between $54,000 and $5 million? I'm sure this woman probably doesn't have that kind of money to pay them, so they're not going to get it anyway.
Well, she's unemployed.
Exactly. So what's the point? I'm just talking about, there is a point from the test case, but from the point of view of this individual, there is no point in pursuing this. And I can't remember who said it just now. The lawyers have probably already had that much anyway, and I suspect they've got a bigger hand in this than anybody else.
Well, no, remember the, well, I mean, that may be on the, all right. Whoa, I'm hearing myself back all of a sudden.
That's Skype, mate. It can't be me anymore.
That's weird.
I am echo proof back here, dude.
I was saying maybe the RIAA lawyers are growing fat and rich off of this, but in the case of this lady's lawyers, they're totally pro bono. I think they're the EFF, are they not?
Really? Oh, that's so cool.
It wasn't because there was the guy who didn't the Nielsen, the guy that was a law professor at Harvard. He took on his case and he ended up getting stitched completely and he lost the money and we've never heard from him again. And he had to pay. But I think this lot are EFF, definitely.
Yeah, because the problem with this case is because they, you know, the EFF and other people concerned with the causes of the Electronic Frontier Foundation are concerned about copyrights and things like that, are concerned that this is going to be a precedent-setting case that they want to turn out properly for the consumers. Unfortunately, this lady got in a lot of trouble because she like completely blatantly lied to the court in like the first round or two. So her conduct has made her look bad as a person. And so everyone's kind of like, oh man, this is not a very good case to have like the shining example. Because the judges want to just throw the book at this lady anyway, just because they feel like they don't like how she's been handling herself in court. And there are accusations of her being kind of a lowlife or something anyway, but nevertheless, I think this is very important for the future of how you can sue people. I mean, just think about it. You should not be able to sue an individual of modest means for like $5 million for giving away half a CD.
The interesting thing here is that this case has taken so long, she's got married. And by the time it finishes, she could well be divorced, I would have thought. If you look at the average age of marriage. Never mind, eh?
Absolutely.
Best of luck, Tommy.
Madness. Absolute madness.
The other thing that's record related is the MP3 Tunes verdict. Now, have you read that one? This was the guy that came up with MP3.com, Michael Robertson. He had this service whereby you took your MP3 and you shoved it in the cloud using MP3.com and it would always be available for you. And he did this in 2007. So, you know, this is again going back to those Kazaa days, and it was done. Cloud storage was working there and then. Now that was shut down, and he was sued, and for some things that he put up in personally, he's still being chased. But he's created a new firm called mp3tunes.com, which does, guess what?
Is that the same thing?
It stores MP3s in the cloud. So he's been taken to court by the music industry yet again, citing DMCA, and he's been crushed because of stuff that he'd done himself. But Judge William Pauly's reasoning has suggested that if you take an MP3 file and you own that MP3 file and it is on your computer, it is not a breach of the DMCA to store it in the cloud. And that applies regardless of whether you've purchased from the repository that is storing it for you. So if you look at Amazon's cloud thing, you're talking about all your Amazon stuff getting stored in the cloud. Well, this judgment apparently says if you've got the MP3 on your computer, you can store that in the cloud. There's nothing to stop you. But it must be the exact same copy. It's got to be like the file size has got to be the same. Total level, everything about it has to be the same. Labeling has got to be the same. ID3
what's tags, brilliant about that is it sets a much more effective legal precedent than any of this crap that the RIA are sort of grinding through over the course of 4 years. Now we know where we are with it. We know what we can do. And that will benefit Amazon and anybody else who wants to sort of offer these particular services is like for like, even the Google Music stuff. And I noticed that RIM are trying to sort of get in on the deal as well with I don't know whether it's selling music or some ridiculous thing like that. Better late than never, boys.
Everybody's trying to get into this market at the minute, it seems to me now. No, Apple and Google are both having it. I'm sure there's another couple of companies that are all sort of pitching into the same market now.
Well, what's interesting is that this ruling says that if what you've got is what you're putting up, then yep. There's no issue with DMCA. So if the bit rate that you've encoded it at is 80 kilobits a second and you put it up in the cloud, you can't then have 256 kilobits a second and say it's the same thing. It's got to be 80 kilobits per second. It's got to be exactly the same thing. If you've ripped it at 9 kilobits a second, 9.6, it's still got to be 9.6. You can't suddenly upgrade it. But if you look at what Apple is potentially pretending to do, in the autumn, they're going to have basically your whole DVD or your whole hard drive is going to be scanned for music, and whatever you've got, they will replicate in the cloud at 256. That's the idea of iTunes Match.
Right, and of course they can do that because we think that they've struck deals with each individual record company and are paying them for the license ability to do that.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's how for them it's not a copyright issue. No. But in regards
because the license
is
held by Apple rather than the end user. Yeah.
Yeah, but in regards to this court ruling, I think maybe so far so good. It's certainly a good thing that services like Google Music and Amazon Cloud Player can even exist, because I of course never thought they were illegal in any way. Of course, that's the person's personal copy, but I still think it's really bad and really old-fashioned thinking, not understanding the technology or the benefits of it, to say that you can't have, to say that you can't, for instance, just prove somehow that you own a copy of a song, like by uploading it, for instance, and have that storage and streaming company say, okay, everyone sent me the same song, so I'm gonna just store one copy, and it's crazy that they still can't do that,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to store all iterations of what's uploaded.
Yeah, at every bit rate too. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
It says deduplication allowed in the article you posted.
You can duplicate, but you can duplicate based on the fact that it's an identical copy.
No, deduplicate. So what that means is that if we've all got one particular MP3, we'll keep just one copy of that particular MP3 and have links to
only if it's
others.
Identical.
Yeah, but
it's identical.
It's got to be identical. Otherwise, they've got to store each individual
iteration
of it. And you're talking about going down to the individual bit, effectively, of the file size.
So even if my MP3 tag is spelt wrong, you've got to keep a different copy than the one where it's spelt wrong.
It's more likely to be the, well, not so much the MP3 tag, because that's metadata associated with MP3. It's the actual, for example, if you use a lame encoder to do one and use the Apple encoder to do another, you will get two MP3s of the same bit rate, but they will ostensibly be different because they have different psychoacoustic kind of effects on them. So it's kind of like it is a bit of a mess. What I was going to say was this is totally at the whim of the music companies. The music companies always wave the flag of actually we're supporting the artists. We're trying to defend the rights of the artists. The artists who make 5% of all the money that they make of it. They're just trying to defend their own interests.
Did any of you guys see Meatloaf on Piers Morgan this week?
I don't. Piers Morgan.
Oh, Piers Morgan's show. He's taken over Larry King for his show, and I actually quite like him. He does a good job of interviewing. He had some girl walk out on him as well last week, which was quite interesting. But he interviewed Meatloaf, and he said, "So you know, bat out of hell, phenomenally successful record. You know, you must be very proud of it." And Meatloaf says, well, yeah. I mean, the only ones that have sold more than us are Ace of Spades and Thriller. He said, so your third largest selling record of all time? Yeah, absolutely. 43 million copies have been sold in history. He said, wow. He says, you must have made a ton of money out of that music. You know, you don't have to tell me the exact figure, but you know, you must have made a lot of money. He said, no, actually, I probably lost money on it because just after we created it in 1983, I got sued by the record label and I lost $100 million.
Oh, my goodness me. So, they really are shysters, aren't they?
The record label said he was in breach of contract, sued him, got out of giving him any of the royalties for it, and they've sold 43 million copies of it. And every time he produces and pays, every time he sings one of the songs publicly, he technically owes them a performance fee.
Oh, no. The thing is, I think this is...
Go ahead.
It's insane.
I was going to say, I think the thing is, this whole issue is, we're talking about record companies. I think this is why there's so many acts these days that are concentrating more on live performances and their own shows because they make a higher margin on the considerably higher margin on that than they will on selling downloads and so on and so forth.
Because they're getting squeezed out by the record labels who are saying that they can't pay them as much because of the stealing of records, which is bull.
And absolutely. And what else is happening is that smaller artists are going and plying their trade, going out to gigs and then doing their own electronic distribution of the media on the back of it, either selling it for very cheap or selling it for free, the studio copies of stuff, which isn't actually too expensive to do. The record industry really is in the on the run on this one because they can't afford to run these massive studios because people can create music in their own front rooms now, which is brilliant.
Yes.
Did you see that Red Hot Chili Peppers have released their album on iTunes this week and you can stream the whole thing for free?
Well done, then.
Oh, that's good.
And it's a good album. I sat and played it on Wednesday while I was sat in the office, and it's
Is it good funk rock pop?
It's classic. It's it's classic Red Hot Chili Peppers, mate.
All right,
you'll love it.
They did go downhill a little bit in the early part of the 21st century, but we'll see. Everybody,
you know,
have
I
a
saw
listen
that,
to it.
I saw that too. I want to try streaming that, but I'm curious. I guess probably someone published this somewhere. I should look it up. I wonder whether this was the decision of the Chili Peppers themselves or whether this was some kind of experiment done by the record label with a record that they were sure was guaranteed to sell through the roof, no matter how many people streamed the full CD quality version for free over and over and over again.
I think the thing to look at is that you will have a proportion of people who on Wednesday when it was released would have sat down with a little Soundflower loop going in their audio devices that would have allowed it to play straight through to Logic or to GarageBand and recorded it. You know, I mean, it's a 10-minute, well, not even 10 minutes, it's a 2-minute job to set up that interface and loop to record the whole album, and you can carry on using your computer with all the sound on, listen to it, and it's recording at the same time, and it's just going to chopping it and cutting it up. And I haven't done it, even though I've thought about it. But I was just wondering how many people actually did that because, you know, at $10, I don't think many would.
I don't think many people did that. And in fact, I actually think that if you have so much more time than money that you have to spend hours doing that, then just do it and don't sue the person. Just let them do that because they probably wouldn't have bought it anyway, either because they don't like the music enough or they can't afford it. So just let that person spend 5 hours copying it illegally, because that's such like that's less than 1% of people, I'm sure.
The only thing that I would say that they've created desire for piracy is that I liked the album and I can't buy it for another 10 days.
I wonder how long the sort of free streaming's going to last for.
It lasts until it goes up for sale, and I can only buy one track that's on it. I can't buy the whole album. The whole album won't be available to me for 10 days. And if I wanted to sit and listen to it, I've got to be in connection with iTunes. I can't put it on my phone and listen to it in the car. So the only way I would be able to listen to it is to steal it temporarily until I could buy the album.
Okay, that's different. You and I stand corrected. People are going to do that. I didn't realize when you said that the album isn't itself for sale yet. That changes the whole equation, because if you love this album and you're a Chili Peppers fan and you stream this thing and you love it and you're like, I can't buy it for 15 more days. Well, then, yeah, you're going to hit record and then play it once through, make a CD, put it in your car, just become completely fatigued of the thing. Listen to it 1,000 times in a row. By the time it comes out, you're sick of it. You're not going to buy it. What are they thinking?
So that's the only part I thought was a really stupid move.
Yeah.
But Radiohead have been giving their albums away for years, haven't they?
Yeah, Nine Inch Nails as well. They made $1.6 million and gave away their entire album.
But both Red Hot, both Nine Inch Nails and Radiohead have a massive amount of creative control over what they do. In fact, to the detriment of their, I imagine the record labels are probably rather frustrated with what they're doing, and they tend to sort of lead where others don't actually end up following with these ideas. Red Hot Chili Peppers, from me, just from what I've read, from what I've seen so far, this seems like a fairly cynical marketing ploy. It works. It makes iTunes look great because it's a free album. Everybody's going to use iTunes. It makes the Red Hot Chili Peppers look great, or whoever represents them, because they're doing something for free. But in the end, everybody buys the album. It could turn out to be a new marketing model. Whether it will catch on, I don't know. But people are going to end up having to pay for it, although there is, as you say, the opportunity to nick it for free. But then again, the RIAA may be watching you.
What's interesting?
Do you think Apple's paying them to do it? Do you think Apple is paying them for the privilege of being able to stream it?
I think that's probably likely.
Probably. Or the record company, at least.
Or the record company, but
Well, there's got to be at least a public performance license being paid for. You know, like a radio would play for it, which we would have over here in the UK. They'd be entitled rights under PRS, Performing Rights Society. What was interesting as well was the whole album is still available for stream and still available for pre-order. It's not being released until the 29th. But track 4, Ethiopia, was available for purchase on Wednesday. Now none of the tracks are available for purchase.
That's weird.
Mm. What's that all about? Yeah.
So, I don't know. I have no idea. Interesting conversation. I mean, we're talking there about storing items in the cloud. Just to finish off then, I mean, is it really going to go for, you know, cloud is everything now? I mean, there was an interesting article on Ars Technica this week talking about, on Tech Radar, talking about how long is it before local storage is actually dead across the planet?
Hey, buggery, never.
Never?
Can't see it. Never, can't see it.
I think Google would like it to be different with their Chromebook, yeah.
But it's such an inconvenient thing if you're not in a permanently wired and connected world, that you suddenly you've got a useless lump of plastic and glass on your hands that you can't do anything with, because your OS is elsewhere and your storage is elsewhere and your files.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
And your cellular connection's gone down and your broadband wire's broken. Somebody's gone into the cabinet and wired it up wrong.
I mean. I personally am probably not a great realistic model for storage, but under this desk, I've got 12 terabytes of storage spread across four boxes with various, you know, some RAID and some non-RAID, and I've got ChronoSync sat on the Mac here that bounces backwards and forwards between, you know, Monday night backs up all my movies, Tuesday night backs all my music, Wednesday night backs all my photos. And then once a month, I take another drive and I back up all my photos and take it up to my parents' house. Now, I mean, that's atypical, I would say, for most users. But, I mean, how much does 12 terabytes of storage going to cost me in the cloud at the moment, on the going rate? You're talking about $70 for 50 megabytes, 50 gigabytes, rather?
It's very expensive.
Yes.
So I think 100 years in the future, there will not be any kind of local storage in the way we think of it now, where the amount we could store would take days to transmit over the internet or whatever it's called in the future. I think it's going to eventually look like the same kind of a cache we have on hard drives, where it's like a 2 terabyte drive with a 4 megabyte cache or something. Or I guess now they're up to 64, but still comparatively, it's a very small percentage of the local cache relative to the larger data repository. So I think that's going to be the future when high bandwidth network connections are ubiquitous and on every device. I think that's destined to happen. Before that happens, though, I don't think in the very near future we're still going to be having to store our professionally made media anymore. I think we're in this, you know, it used to be everyone always, you know, you bought books and you bought a bookshelf. You bought videos, you put them on a video shelf, DVDs, CDs on a shelf. And then you could loan them, you could do things, you could swap them. And, you know, they were expensive because they were a plastic or a piece of printed material. And they had physical intrinsic value that could be sold after the fact and everything. We're in this kind of weird no man's land now where they still don't want us to be able to sell things, but they don't want it to, they don't want us to resell things, but they want us to pay the same price and have even more restrictions than we have over those things. So I think, and in the case of Apple, they're going to sell us the movie for the same price and then give us the MP4 and say, this is yours, so you better back it up because we're not going to give it to you again. I think that's a weird intermediate step. I think that's going away. I think the first storage that will be taken out of our hands, out of our obligation as consumers to back up ourselves, is going to be that music, movies, and other things. And then we'll have other similar services like iCloud for automated backup of photos and our personal media that we created, family photos, stuff like that. Documents. But I think that Hollywood movie stuff, that's going to go to the cloud very fast.
So it's going to be a two-tier system, really, isn't it? Mm. As long as people stop buying stuff, physical stuff from the shops.
I mean, that's the interesting thing statement that you're making there, though, Eric, that you know, it will be no longer ours to sell.
Sorry.
It's all right, mate.
Sounded like a can.
It never was yours to sell. It was always a licensed product. Once you buy a CD, you have no right to sell it on eBay. It's not a piece of property. You're licensing the playing of that disc.
Did you hear? You absolutely do hear. It's called the right of first sale, I think. You're absolutely allowed to resell a CD or a book or anything, a DVD, anything physical.
Right. Because here in the UK, that you're licensed to play it. That's it.
That's interesting. So do you not have any used record stores or used DVD stores?
Yeah, we have used record stores. But I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But what I'm saying is you said you have a right to it, and you certainly don't. I mean, there's a lot of sales of computers with discs on eBay that have been stopped in this country. So I sell you a Mac with...
No. Software's different.
No, it's the same thing. It's still licensed. That's what the whole point is that... If you look at the whole of the music industry, it always talks and works around licenses. It never talks and works around property.
So is that to say that all the stuff that gets sold at on Amazon Marketplace and eBay and things like that, the industry's just turning a blind eye to it in the UK?
Yeah. It's what they choose to enforce because it's a civil breach of copyright,
yep.
A civil breach of license, nothing more.
Well, so over here, software is in a completely different category from music and movies. So do you not have used media stores like that over there? Like you don't have like a corner neighborhood store? I mean, obviously they'd be less popular now than they were years ago, but a corner used record store, used movie store, kind of thing?
Yeah, we absolutely do.
And it's illegal?
No, it's not illegal, because illegal maybe gives it the connotation of the fact that it's a criminal offense to do it. It's not. If the record label chooses to enforce its civil rights on those things, then you could be sued for selling something which is not yours to sell.
And God bless them, they don't.
What a good music.
I'll tell you what, I was just thinking, you know, you get sort of videos and things like that in charity shops. That would be PR if they started suing the charity shops, wouldn't it?
There you go.
You won't put it past them, though.
Didn't we have a conversation the other week about...
Yeah, but guys, it's bad PR to sue unemployed women whose little kid downloaded 20 songs. I mean, that's
Good point, Eric.
I mean, I'm really surprised that 1 minute we're saying that these are evil, nasty people who just want people to not be able to enjoy music in their lives. And the next minute we're saying, oh, just by the goodness of their heart, they let a used reselling industry exist for as long as recordings have existed and just haven't sued them yet. But they're going after individuals on the internet for sharing 20 songs.
The thing is, Eric, that was a test case. That's what it was all about. It wasn't about that individual.
It was a line in the sand.
Yep.
Yeah. And it is utterly hypocritical. I totally agree.
Yep.
When there's records being sold after people have ripped them. I mean, there's even, haven't you got sites now that offer you money for your CDs?
There's Music Magpie.
There you go. Yeah, you take all your songs, you rip them onto your computer, and you sell them to Music Magpie. But Music Magpie don't tell you that if you've ripped all the songs off and you're still in possession of them, and you sell them the CD, you're now holding that illegally.
Oh, right. That's always been the case here too.
Yeah.
But just selling. But if you made no personal copy, you could always turn around and resell a CD or a book or whatever kind of a movie you have, or even a video game.
Hmm.
Yeah, wasn't there that site that actually offered to rip all your CDs? They would take the CDs and sell them. That's where they'd make their margin and give you all the MP3s back.
Yeah, I mean, there was the interesting one as well with Real DVD, who said that they would rip all your DVDs and encode them so that only you could play them. And the MPAA still objected and had it and took them to court for it.
And there's other companies. Well, there's a company make a little tiny device that you can. It's effectively a format shifter. You put your CDs in, it rips them to the hard drive. It's a really nice, elegant little box, and I can't think who makes it for the life of me now. But the RAA or the NPA or whoever have had a go at them now, and they can't say anything in their marketing now about the fact the little device will rip, that you can bang your CD in and rip your music off on it. And that's madness.
It's all very well saying this, yet ye, who has not sued anyone for infringing his extensive licensing agreements, let them cast the first stone. Oh, hang on a minute. That's all of it, isn't it?
A quick word before we continue then on the European Podcast Awards, because we're nominated. The Big Show, the Photo Show, the Daily Show, and the Mac Show are all nominated in the personality category. If you'd like to vote for us, thank you very much. Keep voting and vote and vote and vote as much as you possibly can. If you go to the Bagel Tech webpage, there's a little blue panel there. It's not little anymore. It's actually rather large because I want to win. All you have to do is go there and vote for us. Click on the logo that you see there, and it'll take you to the page where you vote for it. Now, don't do it on an iOS device, because in their infinite wisdom, these people have made it with Flash, so it doesn't work on an iPad and it doesn't work on an iPhone. There is a graduating scale from 1 to 5 stars that you have to illuminate and then click vote. I think a few people have been and voted for us thinking that they could do it on an iPhone, and what they've clicked is Google's and Facebook's like buttons on the right-hand side, because we've got a few likes and stuff like that up and down. If you want to vote for us, you've got to illuminate the stars, and if you don't see the stars, then you've not got Flash switched on and you will not be able to vote. But please go to our site and do that. And if you close your browser...
Do it right now while you're listening.
Yes, absolutely. And if you close your browser and open it again, you've got cookies to flush, you can vote again straight afterwards.
Which one should they vote for, Ewan?
They should vote for all of them.
Righto.
Every single one. As many times as you possibly can. And I felt bad about thinking that I could do that earlier on today, but I don't feel bad anymore, because apparently what they're doing is, when they get all the votes in from people, they're still picking the podcasts that they want to review, and a group of panel people are going to pick the winners anyway. So I don't care now. but you've got to close your browser, otherwise it tells you off. It says you've already voted for it. Last word goes to our sponsors, UK2.net. They are everything to us. Please, please support them. All you need to do to support us is to support them. They pick up all of the bandwidth charges. We've had a phenomenal few months. They've moved us off the server that we broke onto a new one because it couldn't cope. They've had extra nodes most weeks to make sure that they can deal with the demand. 4 terabytes of bandwidth disappeared last month just in audio alone, and we haven't even started video yet. We're still trying to go for that. Please go to bageltechnews.com. Click on the UK2 logo that you see there. That'll track you through so that they know that you come from us. Just use that even if you want to just sign into your account. And then anything you want to buy, domain names or VPS server, co-location services, hosting, anything you fancy, buy it, stick it in your basket. When you get to the checkout, type in Bagel Tech as your offer code, and you'll get 15% off the price of everything that you've bought. Now, if you're buying or transferring a domain into UK2.net, it's a different code for you. One of the things that UK2 charge for is a domain management transfer fee. It's a one-time only fee. I think it's about £16 per domain. But Bagel Tech listeners don't pay for that, is the long and the short of it. So instead of typing in Bagel Tech in your offer code, what you need to type in is Bagel DNS, all one word. And Bagel DNS will negate the DNS management charge. It won't come up on your bill. There you go. So that's UK2.net. Please, please, please support them. They mean the world to us, and we really would be lost without them. I couldn't afford the payments on the bandwidth that they pick up for us, so we are very, very grateful to them. Thanks a lot. Right. Good show, chaps. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed that one very much. Some good conversations. Where can we get a hold of you, James?
You can get a hold of me on Twitter as Syzygy. That's where I spend most of my time, I think. It's S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. I've posted about 4 things to Facebook in the last week and still haven't done anything really on Google Plus.
Yeah, I opened it the other day because I got some criticism, and I closed it again. I haven't done it since. Good point. Ian, where can we get you, mate?
I'm on Twitter at T-A-Y-B-O-A. Turn it off and back on again. I'll be there chuntering about something or other when I remember to use it.
I didn't answer your question, did I, about the drive bay thing? I can't remember the name of it. It was M something or other.
Oh, the MCE one, the Optibay.
That's it, MCE Optibay, that was it.
Cool. Oh, so there are some cheapy ones you can grab off.
It was very good.
eBay and the like, and I wasn't sure that it was what you'd got, or you'd got the proper one.
Mine was also the Easy Change one, because it's the 2008 MacBook Pro, so.
I've got a 2000, but I've got the early one, so I've got a full stripped screws out and everything. I've had it apart a couple of times in the past, so it's not too scary.
I've got one screw left. Yeah, it was very good. Very good. A friend of mine's just bought the 512 and for £600 with the kit and with the interface cable, and it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, where can we get you, Mrs.?
You can get hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or like James, the best place is on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Excellent. And finally, Eric, where are you, dude?
EricLanigan.com, twitter.com/EricLanigan, EricLanigan.
If you're wondering why we haven't done the cool thing, is it's because we're already at an hour, and two people never bring anything anyway, so what's the point, eh?
I have to say, my cool thing, incidentally, this week, Ewan, was a work of art, actually, called $5 million, 1 terabyte. I don't know if you've heard about that.
No. What's that about?
If you go to art404.com/5million.html, it's a work of art. Basically, it's a 1 terabyte drive with 5 million quid's worth of illegally downloaded material on it.
What is it? 5 million what?
$5 million worth of illegally downloaded files on this.
No, but what's the URL?
It's art404.com.
Yeah, /
5million.html.
Is that
the great thing about it is you can actually find the links to the software on the site, and it takes you to the Pirate Bay and the links to the BitTorrent.
Oh, dear, dear, dear.
Is that art? I think it's art, and I think it's worth $5 million.
Very good. Go on, has anyone else got a cool thing?
Well, mine was a bit, I thought long and hard about this one. And
I feel bad now.
Why?
Because you've actually done it. Because normally you're kind of flaky on it.
Well, just last week I was. Normally I'm very good, but last week. But yeah, in honor of Steve Jobs, I wanted to do something Apple, and I was going to do the iPad. But no, I thought actually I want to pick something that I really like that Apple have done. So I've gone for the Apple IIe. I know that's an old thing. But it was one of the first computers I ever used, and I wrote my first piece of commercial software for it and absolutely loved it.
Do they still transmit electricity at the same frequency that runs on?
Well, yes, I'm sure they do.
Oh, okay.
It's not that old, but...
I've put the video stream on to see if you've got one there, and you haven't got... I should be holding it up.
Oh, I tell you what, I would love to have one, because a good bit of retro computing would be...
Well, Think Tank's got one in Birmingham.
Ooh.
Think Tank, it's a science museum in Birmingham. We've got one in a case. You can go and gawk at it.
I think my brother's got an Apple II.
No, it's got to be the 2E.
Yeah.
2E or not 2E? Most definitely. The other thing that I got today as well, which I was going to do as my cool thingy, but I forgot. We've run out of time anyway, so it doesn't matter. You may not believe this, but I signed up for a Spotify account today for the first time. And the reason was I missed all the free ones to start with, and no bastards ever sent me an invite.
Oh.
And then out of nowhere this morning, I get an email from Chase Nunes, who does a podcast in the States on the Tech Podcast Network. And he sent me an invite. Thank you very much, Chase. So I've signed up and I've actually got Spotify. And holy hell, what a program.
It's cracking big here.
Oh, I don't know what I've been missing for the last 3 years.
I was going to say, I didn't know you weren't on that.
No, I'm not on it.
I had one for about 2 years.
No, I'm not a Spotify account holder because I missed all the free ones. And I thought, I'm not paying for it. So that was it.
Oh, right.
There you go.
Oh, were the people grandfathered in who had the free ones?
Yeah, but Chase sent me an invite to a free account, so I've signed up for it. Wow. Oh,
that's cool. I mean, I got mine because I was doing a conference and... It was September 2 years ago, and I needed something that would play a lot of background music, and somebody suggested it and then invited me to it, which is why I got my account.
Yeah. Very good.
I've actually got a cool thingy here that it was just sitting
around the desk. Where were you when Eric Lanigan had a cool thingy?
This is, well, you always say I don't have a real one, and here's actually a real one. This is an interesting artifact that it ties into what we've been talking about. This is called a compact disc. Now, in the olden day, in olden days,
I knew he hadn't got a real one.
Retro ones, aren't we?
People used to store music on these, and they would listen to them. And believe it or not, this only held one album long. Can you believe that? And they'd drive to buy these, and they'd carry around stacks and stacks of them. Some people have huge binders full of these things, and then you get scratched, and they wouldn't play it properly, and they were expensive. But you could sell them to someone else when you were done. So that's my cool thingy, a compact disc.
Thank you, mate. Jolly good.
You know, you can also store data on that as well, Eric.
You can?
What have you got, James?
I've got a Rolf Harris album. You can't store data on that.
You've got a Rolf Harris album, dude. two little boys funny. And Jake the Pig.
Diddle, 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 dumb.
Do you have any idea who Rolf Harris is, Eric?
No.
Oh, you got to YouTube Rolf Harris. Rolf Harris
be as funny as the
and
as
Wurzel the Gummidge. There we go.
Oh, God.
There's the title of the show.
He won't be back.
Wurzel Gummidge. Scary stuff for a kid.
What, a bloke with three legs?
Yeah.
Didn't you ever get the flasher connotation in that?
Probably not at the time.
Because he wore a Mac.
Oh, you mean Jake the Peg, not Wurzel Gummidge?
Yeah, with a third leg. I mean, that was it was clearly. It was a song about flashing.
Yeah, I suppose so.
There we go.
Never really thought about
it. I'm going to get angry letters now from Rolf Harris lovers.
Angry of Tunbridge Wells.
We'll be back again next week. Failing that, we'll be sued by Rolf Harris and John Pert. No, John Pert, we can't because he's dead, so that's all right then.
Anybody else we want upset?
Oh, I'm sure we can manage. We'll be back again tomorrow with the Mac Show at 1 o'clock. Please do join us. We'll be live, and Will Green's returning from his holiday in his ill-fated camper van trip, and we'll be teaching him how to say the word Arkansas instead of Arkansas that he kept talking about during the podcast. And we'll be back again with a photo show at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon with the usual crew answering your questions on photography. So have a good 24 hours until you come back and join us, and thanks very much for listening.